The Autobiography of Fudini M. Cat. Fried cat? At least I was now far from the dog. Perhaps she intended to feed me to the dog. We had been in the car for some time now, and we still had not come to the hospital. Had the stupid person driving the car lost his way? Would we never get there? I grew quite sleepy, and as soon as my eyes closed entirely, I began to dream I was an enormous cat lying along a thick bough of a tree, and beneath me gray wolves with red eyes were leaping up against a tree trunk, their eyes on me, their jaws covered with bone. Dogs! My eyes snapped open. Didn't the dog in the car look exactly like those wolves? He did. He was not even a dog. He was a wolf. Nice cat, good cat, the woman said. But I could see right through her. She was a keeper of wolves. I was in a car with a wolf. As soon as the car stopped, I decided I would make my escape. But when the car finally stopped, the woman carried me out in my box, and I was taken into a house I'd never seen before. This house was full of wonderful smells, smells I recognized immediately. They were mouse smells, wonderful and fragrant, which made my tail twitch this way and that. And there were smells of other animals, larger and more dangerous. Woodchucks. Raccoons, a voice whispered between my ears, and I realized it was my dream voice talking to me. This is a mousy house, I thought as the woman carried my cage through the rooms. I like this house better than the city house. I will escape soon and hunt for mice. But the woman knew my intentions. She took me to a small blue room and set my box on the floor. I saw the door to the room and I thought, as soon as she opens my box, I will escape through that door. The woman pulled the door until it clicked shut. And then she opened my box. I looked around carefully before I was ready to climb out. The woman watched me. When I saw the chest of drawers and scurried over to it and squeezed myself beneath it, the woman said, "Not again." She went out, closed the door behind her, and when she came back, she had a dish of food with her. It was warm and steamy and delicious, and I was hungry because it had been a long house drive to this mousy house. But I stayed in my hiding place. When she goes away, I thought, I will come out to eat. She will never find the excellent new hiding place I've discovered this time. While she was gone, I had investigated the room and discovered that the bottom drawer of the bureau was open. I climbed in and saw that there was a dark place behind the drawer. How could anyone reach me in there? How could anyone guess where I was? I jumped into the dark place behind the drawer. I tucked my paws beneath me and congratulated myself on having found such a perfect place so quickly. But when the woman came with my plate, she refused to leave the room. She sat on the bed next to my plate of food and began to call me, "Fudini, Fudini." I would ignore her, I thought, and then she would go away and I could creep from my very dark place behind the bottom drawer. But she was not going to go away, and every instant I grew hungrier until finally I said a quick goodbye to the world and climbed over the back panel of the drawer and fell into the drawer itself. Thump, thump. And then climbed over the front of the drawer and jumped down onto the carpet. Another carpet, smelling this time of mice. Recent mice, fresh mice, live mice. I went over to the bed. It was high off the ground. I climbed up to the bedspread, and when I got to the top, there was a dish of the most delicious food, so naturally I threw caution to the winds and began eating. And while I ate, the woman stroked my head and back. "I will not be taken in by you another time," I swore to myself as I chewed, and just then I heard the dog bark. The worst sound I've ever heard, a noise so loud it made the walls shake, and I thought, it's true what the old cat said. Cats are not conceited animals. They are quiet and quietly go about, mindful of others and careful to cause no trouble. Dogs are the arrogant ones. A dog announces what it has to say at the top of its lungs, convinced the entire world is interested not to be listening. Does a cat do this? No, except under the most extraordinary circumstances. Beware of the world when you hear a cat scream. But a dog will shout everything down. He will drown out every voice and every noise and never think twice. A postman on the street will set up a riot of dog voices. A cat will see the postman coming, will only watch quietly from beneath the bush. Dogs, the old cat said, annoy the entire world. So I finished my meal and retreated to my place behind the drawer. But this time it was harder to get behind the drawer because I had eaten so much that my sides were puffed out, and when I tried to slide over the back wall of the drawer, I had to try twice, and a disagreeable sensation it was, the feel of wood pushing into my extremely round stomach. Next time, eat less, I told myself, but the next time I immediately ate everything on the plate, and it seemed to me that my stomach grew even rounder. I'm afraid to feed him anymore, the woman said. He looks as if he swallowed a shoebox. He might explode. He'll eat as much as you give him, the man said. After all, he was once a starving cat. And so for many days I lived behind my drawer in the blue room, coming out only when the woman came in with my dish of food, my ears always tilted towards the door, listening for the dog, who was often on the other side whimpering. And I thought, well, you may whimper, you monstrosity. You are not coming in here. You are not eating me, and if you try, I will get you on the nose. Then I would remember how big he was, and I would go behind my drawer and cry. When he heard me cry, he would scratch at the door, as if in his eagerness to eat me, he had quite forgotten how the woman would shout at him when she saw his claw marks on the wood. I thought, this is not a bad life, really. The room is warm, and the rug is deep, and during the day, the warm sun falls on the carpet, and there are two flies to chase, who buzz about most interestingly, and several spiders who might leap at trying to catch them in my paws. And there is a window I can sit at, and I can look down the meadow. And there is the wonderful smell of mice coming closer, and even a marvelous scratching in the walls. And one day soon a mouse will run out, and I will be after him, and I will get him, just as my mother used to do. But I should have known. Grace, I should have known. Pay attention to this, Grace. Whenever the room is delightfully warm, whenever we have been well fed, whenever we think ourselves safe from harm, whenever we are foolish enough to congratulate ourselves on our happy fates, then we are in for trouble. Trouble with a tail, Grace. Trouble with a drill or a broom or a mop, Grace. Battle stations, Grace. Hiding places. We must always be ready to run for our lives. Always! Is Grace listening? She is not listening. She is awake now, throwing her torn mouse up in the air and chasing it across the room. Soon she will be laying on her back, her lovely gray stomach exposed to the air, wriggling this way and that, showing the world how attractive she is. The woman will come in and say, what a lovely cat, what an attractive cat, so gray, so smooth, so shiny, and Grace will grow mad with happiness. There could be an alligator walking in from the kitchen. A dog might have climbed in through an open window. What, anything might have happened, but what does Grace expect to happen? She expects one day that a bird will obligingly fly straight into her mouth. She sits on the shelf near the kitchen window, and when she sees birds at the feeder, she talks to them, asking them to come in. Come closer, she says. She makes up names for the birds. She calls them flying feathered feasts. She likes to watch them when it rains, because then they are flying feathered feasts with gravy. All cats are poets in their hearts, and all cats like to make up strange names for things. Grace the cat is not alone in this. I myself made up several poems and songs when I was a young cat, and now I repeat them to myself whenever the house is sad or empty. It is wise to do certain things when you are young, so you will have them to think about when you are older. Grace is again crying to the birds. Foolish animal, I tell her, you will scare them away. But she looks at me with wide, blank eyes and goes on attempting to persuade the birds into her mouth. She is a terrible exasperation to me at times, and a wonder. Such an optimistic animal. So optimistic she does not deserve the name cat. But then her early life was not like mine. Still, no matter what my early life had been, I would have grown into a cautious cat. Even when I was quite a small cat, the woman would pick me up and say, "This cat has heavy bones." They were heavy. With caution and worry, and not only my worries, oh no, I had the dog's worries as well, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I think I will get up casually, as if only to stroll about the room, and then I will leap upon Grace the cat and chase her into the basement and up into the rafters. Not because I'm angry at her, although there is almost always a good reason to be angry at such a senseless creature, but because I want her to remember that at any moment something large may leap upon you, and it is important to know how to reach the rafters as quickly as possible. Once you are safely in the rafters, someone would have to tear the house down to get his hands on you. Who is trying to get his hands on me? And what is bad about that? Asked Grace, the most petted, impudent one-year-old thing. She has never had to face down a dog in order to reach her bowl of food. If she knew what my life has been like. Dogs? Grace the cat asked. Are they nice? After all I have told her. You see how difficult it is to pass on knowledge? To pass on even one single thing? But I never give up. Some grain of understanding may yet flower in Grace's hopelessly happy little brain. And so I will go on with my story. After I had grown quite accustomed to my nice blue room, its two flies and its spiders, its delicious promising aroma of mice, the door periodically opening to admit the woman and her splendid plates of food, after I was quite resigned to living in that room forever, knowing that I was safe from the dog, who lived on the other side of the room, the woman came and left the door open. And right behind her was the dog. Now, you must not think I exaggerate when I say this is no ordinary dog. He looked like a wolf, but he was larger than a wolf. I know I'm short, and at the time I was even shorter and smaller, but when this dog stretched out on the floor of my blue room, which he promptly did, he was as long as the bed. If you counted his tail, that is, and I did, because when his tail hit the door or the chest of drawers, it made a terrible thwack. You must look out for that tail, I told myself. And those teeth, I have never seen such large teeth. And his mouth, big enough to swallow me whole, as if I were a small bit of dry food. I will not be eaten so fast, I told myself in my hiding place behind the bottom door of this new mousy house. And even though I was shivering with my fear, and my heart was thumping hard, I began to make plans. The dog, meanwhile, crept up to the chest of drawers and whined. Such piteous sounds, as if he had not been a dog, I would have felt sorry for him. But he did not paw at the chest of drawers. He did not growl. He seemed to wait for me as I lurked in front of the baseboard behind the bed, where that one baseboard where the essence of mouse was particularly strong. Finally, he got tired of me and went out. So I thought all I have to do is wait patiently, and the dog will go about his business, because dogs, as everyone knows, have no patience whatsoever, and then I can come out, climb the bed, and eat my dinner. But there was no dinner. From the kitchen came the delightful smells of my dinner cooking, and I was hungry. I expected the woman to come in and call me and put my dinner on the bed. When she didn't come, I was dizzy with hunger and disbelief, and I wanted to go into the kitchen and held my head off until the woman produced my plate. She had forgotten me, but the dog hadn't. Every so often, he came into the room and lay down in front of the chest of drawers. And when he did, I raised up my head and hissed as loudly and fiercely as possible. Then I went to sleep, because what else could I do? Finally, I was too hungry to stay hidden behind the drawer, and so I climbed out and scurried beneath one piece of furniture to another until I came to the kitchen. And what did I see? The woman was carrying a plate across the room. Fried liver and bread. Of course it was for me, but she didn't give it to me. She set the plate down in front of the wood stove and the dog. The dog went up to the plate as if he were entitled to every morsel. This was too much for me. I forgot all of my mother's good advice. I forgot my dream about wolves standing up against the tree, pawing its bark, whining in their eagerness to reach a cat who lay along the tree bough. I forgot all of this and I flew beneath the wood stove. And as soon as the dog moved forward to begin eating, I sprang forward and whacked him across the nose. The dog let out a shriek. I grabbed a piece of liver and retreated back underneath the stove and ate it. The dog was still whining, and I was still hungry, so I leapt forward again, stole another piece of liver, and retreated once more to a safe distance. The huge dog rubbed at his huge nose with an enormous paw, and while he did this, I flew forward and bit into another piece of liver. Now the dog made a kind of pleading noise, and as I chewed hastily, fearing the dog would soon sweep up everything on his plate with one swipe of his immense tongue, I noticed that the dog seemed little inclined to hurt me. He was not pressing his head beneath the wood stove to bring his great jaw and teeth closer to me as he could easily have done. He was not growling. No, he lay in front of his plate, whining quietly, staring at me with mournful eyes. That is a ferocious cat, the woman said. The dog will never get anything to eat. I ate pieces of liver until my stomach was quite bulgy, and then I lay down, pressing myself up against the wall in back of the stove. Finally, the dog dared to approach his plate, and as I had foreseen, he cleaned the dish with one swipe of his great tongue. I suppose now he'll try to eat me, I thought, but the dog had lost all interest in me and was standing next to the woman's chair, complaining about the loss of his delicious pieces of liver while she stroked his big ears. Eventually, the dog lay down and went to sleep. and I scurried back to my blue room and my hiding place beneath the drawer. Once I was there, I felt perfectly safe. Safe and well stuffed. How little we know, Grace, of what the future holds in store for us. Which is why we must do more than dance and leap about and sharpen our claws on thready furniture and dangle from curtains just beneath the ceiling when we have climbed them. Which is why we must study what is going on around us, not merely annoy ourselves and everyone else as we try to move into the attractive rooms of a doll's house, which is what you did only last week. Everyone standing about looking at the doll's house saying, "It looks as if a cat got at it," and then your gray paw came curling out of the dining room window. Oh, how little self-control you have. And hadn't I told you the rooms were too small for us? Hadn't I told you I'd done the same thing years before when I myself was a small cat? Didn't I say the rooms look large, but they are not? It is a mistake of our eyes, and did you listen? Certainly not. And yet you were more fortunate than I was. Your collar did not get caught by a hook on the doll's house wall. You did not have to endure a storm of reproaches until you were freed. I have consulted with myself and asked myself if it is wise to tell Grace what happened next. And how surprising was my life after I began to leave my blue room and impudently walk past the dog. As you now know, Grace is not a wise cat. She is a happy cat. And probably for that very reason, she is not very cautious. She sits in bathtubs beneath the tub faucet and lets water drip onto her head while she decides whether to swat at the drips. She doesn't know whether she's a cat or a fish, and she refuses to discuss what is appropriate and advisable for a young cat. Is it judicious of me to tell a remarkable story to such a flighty-minded cat? This story should tell the reader how unpredictable life can be. From this story, one should learn that the worst does not always happen, and that it is quite as bad to be too doomful as it is to be too sanguine. Ah, well, we'll see if she learns anything. I can only try. Day followed day in Mouse House, as I had come to call it, and now I left my room and took up my position beneath the wood stove. The dog barely took notice of me. He is only waiting until I become too confident, and then he will swallow me, I thought. But he didn't seem interested in swallowing me. He appeared to be interested in the smallest thing I did. I went into the living room and chased a spool of thread. He would lie near the entrance to the room and watch me. If I saw a fly and leapt up into the air, clapping my paws together in order to catch and eat it, he observed me with unending curiosity. Every now and then he would try to speak to me, not barking, but imitating. I saw my own voice. And after a while, I began to think, perhaps he is not really a dog or a wolf after all. "He is a dog," said the voices of my ancestors. "Keep clear of him." Then one day, I batted a ball of crumpled aluminum foil across the room, and it came to rest beneath the dog's front paws. The dog looked down at the ball, and then looked at me with expectant interest. What would I do now? And I would never have predicted it. I would never have thought myself capable of such a rash act. But I danced across the room, my back arched, my fur standing on end, and ran right between the dog's huge jaws and batted the ball away from him. The dog observed me with attention, his big ears up and his tail beginning to wag. I hit the ball so it flew right past him. But he didn't chase it. He watched it, and then he looked at me. What did I want him to do? He continued to watch me so eagerly, so expectantly, that I was utterly transported, far beyond common sense, far beyond the voices of my mother and my ancestors, and I hurtled across the room as fast as I could, and I ran up the dog's enormous nose and ran between his ears and let myself slide down his shiny side. The dog stood up and looked down at me, and I prepared to hit him once again on the nose, but he only made a questioning noise. Something halfway between a purr and a growl, and then he lay down again. So I did it once more. I flew across the room, up the dog's nose, across the great plain between his ears, and this time I lay there, my back legs dangling down over his ears and his mouth. Now, this is not as foolhardy as it may seem, because if the dog had growled or tried to bite me, I could easily have raked him with my back paws. The dog made a contented little sound and went on laying on the rug, in the sun, a cat on his head, a cat's leg dangling down either side of his nose. From that day on, we became friends, and we ate from the same dish. This pleased the woman, who said, "Look at that. Look at that," the man said. When I lay on the floor next to the dog got up, sniffed me, and washed me down with one lick of his tongue. I wasn't sure I liked these washing up, but my mother had washed me. She washed me slowly, one small piece at a time, and her sandy tongue made its way down through my fur to my skin, and when she finished, I was shiny and clean. But after the dog washed me, my fur was wet, and I was cold, and my fur was sticky and stood straight up in the air, and I had to clean myself all over again. Naturally, I believed the dog wanted me to wash him in return. After all, there were places he could not reach, even with his enormous tongue. I set about cleaning him behind the ears, and when he stretched out on the rug beneath his chin, but he did not appreciate my efforts. He would yelp and shriek, and when finally I reached down to the skin beneath his fur, and I would lose my temper, and I would put out my nails and attempt to hold him in place while I finished. When I did this, he would get up, and I would slide down his side onto the floor. Then I would hide beneath the sofa until he walked by. And I would jump out at him or dance sideways at him, my fur standing on end, and I would follow him and jump up and grab his tail. After I had made several successful attacks on his tail, I would forgive him for his ungrateful shrieking and yelping, and I would run at him and annoy him until he got up and began to chase me. And in this way, the days passed rather quickly. One cold day, when the wind blew in, even through the closed windows, the dog was laying in the middle of the room, his enormous mouth wide open. I came over, hoping to wake him up and have him chase me, but he was sleeping so deeply, I settled down in front of him, my nose near his nose. I noticed how warm his breath was and how warm the world seemed right near his mouth. I thought, what if I lay across his mouth? In it, so to speak. I wouldn't bother his tongue. As usual, his tongue was hanging out the side of his mouth. So I crept closer and lay myself down across his enormous lower jaw. The dog stirred and opened his eyes, which crossed when he tried to look at me. He sniffed once and then twice, and then, convinced it was me lying in his mouth and not some strange mole or mouse, he went back to sleep. Eventually, I turned over my back and continued sleeping in the dog's warm mouth. "Look at that," said the woman. "That dog has the patience of a saint," said the man. I was comfortable, very warm and very wet when I awakened, and the dog slept on where he was. But since it was still chilly in this new house, I retreated to my new favorite place, behind the bright red stove in the living room. When I first began to sleep beneath this stove, I inadvertently caused a great commotion. No one could find me, and I myself was so sound asleep, so happily stupefied by the heat, that I didn't hear the woman calling my name. I didn't hear her tap the plate with a spoon, a sound that always brought me flying from behind my drawer, where I still predictably retreated. Beneath the wood stove, the heat fell on me like a thick blanket, and it was as if I was once again in my wall, half buried beneath the warm body of my mother. Beneath that stove, I dreamed the most pleasant dreams. I felt myself grow warm until even my bones were warm, and my ears melted softly against my head, and although I usually slept as a cat should, curled up into a neat circle, when I rested beneath that stove, I sprawled out higgledy-piggledy, each paw pointing in a different direction. When my eyes opened, I staggered out half-melted, tilting this way or that way, stunned by the heat, and did not clean myself immediately because my fur was too hot against my tongue.